I would bring back waterboarding, and I'd bring back a hell of a lot worse than waterboarding.
Yes, you would. And yes, you might.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
It isn't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep.
Yes, I'm stuck in the middle with you.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK, 90.7 FM in L.A., up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, and in Cottage Grove on Queso. In Lancaster, Pennsylvania on WLRI, in Maui, Hawaii on KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, in Palinville, New York on WLPP, Grand Rapids, Michigan's WPRR, New Orleans WHIV, Gallup, New Mexico's KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, Seattle, Washington's KODX, Red Bluff and Redding, California's KFOI, Round Mountain, California's KKRN, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, GDPR, Revolution 99, Workforce Rising, Detour Talk, and many other fine affiliates across this planet Earth, blanketing planet Earth, 5 days a week. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all around swell fellow, says me, at the end of the show, yesterday's show, we had somebody who stopped by bradblog.com/donate, left a nice note, and called me a swell fellow.
Well, there you go.
That person also said that the show is fun.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad somebody's having fun.
Yeah. Well, I know. And just because he said that, let me ruin it by talking about torture a little bit today, shall we? All right. First, and of course, that's Desi Doyen. Hi, Des.
Hi.
Say hello to the people.
I am here,
all right.
Yes.
There we go. I wanted to... A lot of media outlets make corrections to stories. They bury them at the end of the story or at the end of the show. We like to put our corrections up front. If you listen to this show, you know that we like to, when we make a mistake, we like to admit to it right off the bat. Well, in this case, we didn't really make a mistake, so to speak. One of my guests did, and even she did not really make a mistake. She was basing her comments off of a report that a lot of folks have been citing of late over at ProPublica regarding torture. And so I want to sort of correct the record here. We spoke with Marcy Wheeler a few days ago, national security journalist, and she talked about the waterboarding of Abu Zubaydah that was overseen by Gina Haspel, or said to have been overseen by Gina Haspel. Gina Haspel is the deputy chief of the CIA, and she has been nominated by Donald Trump to become the director of the CIA, with Donald Trump taking the current director of the CIA, Mike Pompeo, and moving him over to Secretary of State to take the place of Rex Tillerson, who he fired a few days ago. So we were talking about Gina Haspel and her role in torture during the George W. Bush administration, and Marcy Wheeler had cited the fact that Abu Zubaydah had been waterboarded 83 times. Now, to be clear, waterboarding is torture. It has been found to be torture over and over again across the globe. There is no actual debate about this other than a few George W. Bush, Dick Cheney dead enders in this country. But the fact is, waterboarding is torture. Zubaydah was tortured 83 times by waterboarding. And Marcy, citing this report from ProPublica, had said that Gina Haspel, the nominee to head the CIA, ran the secret prison, the black site in Thailand in 2002 when Zubaydah was tortured. with waterboarding. Now, that was based on the ProPublica report, which issued on Thursday night a big correction to their story. So let me go to that. On February 22nd, 2017, this according to the editor-in-chief, Stephen Engelberg, over at ProPublica. On February 22nd, 2017, ProPublica published a story that inaccurately described Gina Haspel's role in the treatment of Abu Zubaydah, a suspected al-Qaeda leader who was imprisoned by the CIA at a secret black site in Thailand in 2002. The story said that Haspel, a career CIA officer who President Trump has nominated to be the next director of Central Intelligence, oversaw the clandestine base where Zubaydah was subjected to waterboarding and other coercive interrogation methods that are widely seen as torture. The story also said she mocked the prisoner's suffering in a private conversation. Neither of those assertions is correct, and we retract them, says ProPublica. It is now clear that Haspel did not take charge of the base until after the interrogation of Zubaydah had ended. They write, our account of Haspel's action was drawn in part from declassified agency cables and CIA-reviewed books, which referred to the official overseeing Zubaydah's interrogation at a secret prison in Thailand as the, quote, chief of base. The books and the cables redacted the name of the official, as is routinely done in declassified documents, referring to covert operations. The Trump administration has named Haspel to the CIA's number two job. Back in February of 2017, and soon after, three former government officials told ProPublica that Haspel was chief of base in Thailand at that prison at the time of Zubaydah's waterboarding. But that, ProPublica says, is not true. They also found other information along those lines, an online posting from John Kiriakou, a former CIA counterterrorism officer who wrote that, quote, it was Haspel who oversaw the staff at the Thai prison, including two psychologists who, quote, designed the torture techniques and who actually carried out torture on the prisoners. They note the nomination of Haspel this past week to head the CIA has stirred new controversy about her role in the detention and interrogation of terror suspects, as well as the destruction of videotapes of the interrogation of Zubaydah and another suspect. Some critics cited the 2017 ProPublica story as evidence that she was not fit to run the agency. Now, they have corrected that. She was not, in fact, there when Abu Zubaydah was tortured. But she did serve as chief of the of base in Thailand at this prison. She did not arrive until later in 2002, after the waterboarding of Zubaydah had ended. She came after Zubaydah, who had been waterboarded 83 times. She came after that, but before another prisoner, Abda al-Rahim al-Nashira, was waterboarded at that prison, tortured at that prison by waterboard three times. So Haspel was there when, in fact, this other prisoner was tortured by waterboarding. ProPublica also says they stand by their reporting that Haspel oversaw that torture at the prison and led the destruction of the videotaped evidence of the torture sessions between al-Nashira and of Zubaydah. She, in fact, came up with the method used to destroy those videotapes of that torture. So to be clear here, as Eric Umansky, ProPublica's deputy managing editor, tweeted on Thursday night after the correction was issued, he said a few things about Gina Haspel. We were wrong. She didn't oversee torture of Abu Zubaydah. She did oversee the CIA dark prison and the torture of another detainee. She was involved in destroying tapes of torture as well.
So of their three different things, they're only retracting that one part.
That one part and the other about her making disparaging comments about the guy who was being tortured. Apparently that was done by whoever, and I don't think we know yet who the other chief of base was
before she got there.
Right. But this is important. because I think it's going to be very easy now for fans and apologists of torture and fans and apologists of Donald Trump, who loves torture, by the way, to dismiss the reports of Gina Haspel's direct involvement in torture and the destruction of evidence of torture. It's going to be easy for them to dismiss it now as if it was fake news when it is decidedly not fake news. So I want to focus on this point because this is important. Gina Haspel will be coming up for review, her confirmation hearings in the U.S. Senate. She still has to be confirmed into this role. And from everything that we know, including this correction by ProPublica, Gina Haspel is a torturer. That would make her a war criminal. And so make no mistake, this is still a very serious thing, and make no mistake, Donald Trump is very much in favor of torture. Here's a clip of Donald Trump at February 2016.
Yes, during the presidential campaign.
During the campaign, one of the debates, I think.
Yes.
Here's what Donald Trump had to say about waterboarding and torture.
Well, I'll tell you what. In the Middle East, we have people chopping the heads off Christians. We have things that we have never seen before as a group. We have never seen before. Not since medieval times have people seen what's going on. I would bring back waterboarding, and I'd bring back a hell of a lot worse than waterboarding.
Mr. Trump, thank you.
So he would bring back waterboarding, which is torture, and he would bring back a hell of a lot worse than waterboarding. And he admitted as much. And now he has nominated someone who oversaw waterboarding and torture and the destruction of evidence for those crimes. He has now nominated her to become the chief of the Central Intelligence Agency, which oversaw that torture during the George W. Bush regime. Federal prosecutors in Munich, Germany, are currently reviewing a request to issue an arrest warrant for Gina Haspel, Trump's recently named nominee to head the CIA. Haspel currently serves as the deputy director for the CIA and as Law and Crime notes, this is Colin Kalmbacher at Law and Crime, she must still be approved by the U.S. Senate. But this is as Germany is considering a request to issue an arrest warrant for her. Haspel's tenure as chief of base at the secret CIA prison in Thailand and what she did while serving in that role is the subject of the arrest warrant request in Germany. They explain that on June 6, 2017, the European Center for Constitutional and Human Rights, that's the ECCHR, initiated a request for legal action against Haspel by filing an intervention with the German federal public prosecutor, the foremost law enforcement authority in Germany. The office is currently led by the Attorney General Peter Frank. ECCHR's legal intervention was made by way of a six-page document titled CIA Torture Submission on Gina Haspel to German Federal Prosecutor. Immediately after they submitted their request, Frank's office confirmed that this request was received and was being formally reviewed. Now, this was June last year. This was after Haspel was put in place to be the deputy chief of the CIA. And according to the German public broadcaster Deutsche Welle, the investigation into those formal charges for Haspel is presently ongoing. The human rights group's request is based on the alleged violation of the European Convention on Human Rights, Article 3. This article prohibits torture and, quote, inhuman or degrading treatment or punishment, unquote. There are no recognized exceptions or limitations on the right not to be subject to torture under this section. In a statement, ECCHR's general secretary said, those who commit, order, or allow torture should be brought before a court. This is especially true for senior officials from powerful nations. The prosecutor must under the principle of universal jurisdiction, open investigations, secure evidence, and seek an arrest warrant. If the deputy director travels to Germany or to Europe, she must be arrested. Again, this is not optional under the treaties that are also signed, not just by Europe, but by the U.S. We are a party to these same treaties. The Convention Against Torture and Other Cruel, Inhuman, or Degrading Treatment or Punishment was a treaty that was brokered under Ronald Reagan. And in 1988, May 20, 1988, Ronald Reagan, King Reagan, wrote a letter to the U.S. Senate when he was hoping that they would approve this treaty, that they would confirm this treaty in the U.S. Senate. He said in the letter, in part, to the Senate of the United States, the United States participated actively and effectively in the negotiation of the convention. It marks a significant step in the development during this century of international measures against torture and other inhuman treatment or punishment. Torture, he describes, as an abhorrent practice unfortunately still prevalent in the world today. Each state party, he notes, is required under this convention either to prosecute torturers who are found in its territory or to extradite them to other countries for prosecution. By giving its advice and consent, President Reagan wrote, by giving its advice and consent to ratification of this convention, the Senate of the U.S. will demonstrate unequivocally our desire to bring an end to the abhorrent practice of torture. That was President Ronald Reagan in May of 1988, sending this letter requesting that the U.S. Senate ratify this treaty, which the U.S. Senate did. I think it was under George H.W. Bush. It was after Reagan had left office. But they did so. The U.S. is a party to that treaty. This is not optional. You must either prosecute torturers or extradite them to some other country that is a party to this treaty that will prosecute the torturers. Nonetheless, the CIA's torture program, which was admitted to by former President Barack Obama, who admitted that we did this. It was admitted to by Obama, by various high-level officials and whistleblowers and participants in an official U.S. government, several U.S. government reports. It was initially denied, of course, the torture program's existence at all and Haspel's role in the program. But those are now a matter of public record and a matter of public interest to Germany and others in Europe. In 2005, at a time when both members of Congress and terrorism defendants were asking for evidentiary materials relating to torture, Haspel was the one who drafted the cable ordering the destruction of videos of the treatment of Nashiri, the waterboarding of Nashiri, and still more incendiary ones depicting Zubaydah's torture. Her boss, Jose Rodriguez, described in his memoirs about what happened back in 2005 when she wrote these cables calling for this evidence to be destroyed. He wrote, "The cable left nothing to chance. It even told them how to get rid of the tapes. They were to use an industrial strength shredder to do the deed." So, again, torture is illegal, period, under a whole bunch of international pacts and treaties to which the U.S. is bound as a party. It's also illegal under U.S. domestic law. And yet, in 2009, to his eternal shame, then President Barack Obama, who admitted we had done it, he announced a sort of a blanket immunity for any and all of the U.S. officials who were engaged in the Bush administration torture program. But while the legality of that order is in question, Barack Obama does not have the right to just sort of issue blanket immunity. I don't believe he made it an official pardon or anything. He just basically said, we're not going to prosecute these torturers. Nonetheless, that does not release other parties to those torture conventions, those torture treaties, from their duties. In fact, according to those treaties, if the nation harboring those who committed the torture do not bring that torturer to justice, it is the requirement of other countries, a party to that treaty, to take action under it. So if Haspel is confirmed by the U.S. Senate, we will likely have, as the head of the CIA, the head of the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency, someone who cannot even travel to Germany or elsewhere in Europe without facing the threat of potential arrest when she arrives there. That, by the way, is why George W. Bush and Dick Cheney don't really travel anywhere outside the U.S. In general. Because they too could be arrested where they go under these treaties that we signed, that Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush fought so hard for. I don't understand how we could possibly confirm someone to that role, given her track record, given her record, and of course, given Donald Trump's call for let's have more torture or worse. So, again, to be clear, yes, ProPublica, they did correct and retract a number of their claims, but not all of their claims. And it would be really nice if the U.S. Senate and the American people actually knew what part this woman played in actual torture before she is nominated, before she is confirmed as the next chief of the CIA. To that end, Senator Dianne Feinstein on Thursday called on the CIA to release documents related to CIA director nominee Gina Haspel's involvement in the agency's torture program. She writes in a letter to the current CIA director, Mike Pompeo, as we move forward with the nomination process for Ms. Haspel, my fellow senators and I must have the complete picture of Ms. Haspel's involvement in the program in order to fully and fairly review her record and qualifications. Feinstein said, I also believe the American people deserve to know the actual role the person nominated to be the director of the CIA played in what I consider to be one of the darkest chapters in American history. Feinstein herself played a key role in publicizing the CIA's torture practices, and which is something that we talked about with Marcy Wheeler on this show. Feinstein was kind of heroically worked on this this report by the Senate Intelligence Committee for years, outlining the gruesome tactics that the CIA used to interrogate terror suspects, and concluded that the tactics were not effective in gaining any information. So they were both gruesome, and they didn't even do what they were supposed to do, which is get information from these people who were tortured.
They were not only gruesome, they were not only ineffective, they were strictly illegal.
And that too. Feinstein originally blocked Haspel's promotion to lead the CIA's clandestine operations back in 2013 due to Haspel's involvement in the torture program. But when Haspel was first nominated to lead the CIA, a few days ago, Feinstein praised Haspel's work as deputy director, but added she had not yet decided whether she would support Haspel's confirmation. We talked about this again with Marcy Wheeler. Both of us were sort of gobsmacked that Feinstein was even considering approving the nomination, voting in favor of Haspel in the U.S. Senate, given everything that Feinstein knows about this and all of the classified information that she's seen that was not declassified. She fought to declassify a whole lot of it, but there's a lot more that we don't know that Feinstein does. And she blocked Haspel back in 2013. Then all of a sudden she's talking about, well, I find her very nice. Maybe she'll be fine. Well, now Feinstein got a lot of blowback from that, deservedly so. And the very next day, DIFI ended up calling for the release of the documents detailing Haspel's record at the CIA. I hope that information is released. Because in the meantime, you've got folks like Liz Cheney, the daughter of Dick Torturer-in-Chief Cheney, who's now a congresswoman from Wyoming. She is. Liz is, not Dick. She also blocks me on Twitter, so it's hard for me to follow exactly what Liz Cheney is saying. I don't know when she... I only noticed yesterday that she was blocking me when someone had responded to her about apparent comments that Liz Cheney was making about torture. And I had to get somebody else to let me know what the hell it was that Liz Cheney was saying, but here's what she was saying in a tweet. Quote, the enhanced interrogation program, that's what she calls it, instead of the torture program. The enhanced interrogation program, says Liz Cheney, saved lives, prevented attacks, and produced intel that led to Osama bin Laden. The techniques were the same as those used on our own people in the SEER program. No one should slander the brave men and women who carried out this crucial program, says Liz Cheney. Every single sentence she said there is a lie. No, it did not save lives. There is no evidence that it prevented any attacks. It didn't produce the intelligence that led to Osama bin Laden. It is lie, lie, lie. And this is a sitting congresswoman now, Liz Cheney. And no one slanders brave men and women who carried out this crucial program by calling them criminals and torturers, which is what they are. And as far as using those on our own people in the SEER program, as if it was, what is SEER? Do you remember what it stands
for? SEER stands for Survival, Evasion, Resistance, and Escape.
So that's the program they teach people. They use waterboarding, but not to torture them. They use them to help them understand how to survive waterboarding,
yes,
right?
Yes, it inoculates Air Force pilots who may be downed behind enemy lines to teach them how to survive, evade, resist torture, and escape.
And so, and those people, when they are made familiar with those techniques, they're not required to undergo it for lengths, as we did to the people that we were torturing. So to say, we just do this to our own people all the time. Liz Cheney is a terrible person.
And she's lying.
Yeah, she's lying and she's a terrible person. John Weaver, the GOP political strategist for John McCain and for Ohio Governor John Kasich, among others, responded to her. And that's where I even figured out she had made these comments again. She said, Weaver said, I understand you are defending your father's record and viewpoint, but the facts are clear. What you stated isn't true. And America is better than this, Liz. Not sure that we are. He added, truly a dark chapter in American history and not slander, but truth. Deal with it and move on, says John Weaver. Now, Des, you said, because you're not blocked by Liz Cheney, that apparently this was in response to something that John McCain had said?
Yes, it was in response to John McCain saying this is bad, and then Liz Cheney had her little tweet. And so John McCain's daughter, Meghan McCain, said, Liz Cheney, my dad does not need you to explain torture to him.
He actually lived through his own torture during Vietnam, during his years of imprisonment during the Vietnam War. And so now you've got Liz Cheney explaining this to John McCain. Here's what actually McCain had said. He said the torture of detainees in U.S. custody during the last decade was one of the darkest chapters in American history. He did not say the enhanced interrogation of those detainees, the torture of those detainees in U.S. custody. He said the Senate must do its job in scrutinizing the record and involvement of Gina Haspel in this disgraceful program. John McCain is right on the money. So, I noticed after I started looking into this last night, nobody is currently... running. Nobody is currently filed to run against Liz Cheney for Wyoming's only U.S. House seat in 2018. So it would be nice if a Democrat stepped up to do that. They only have one House seat. Liz Cheney is the one who occupies it. And she loves torture. Might be nice if a Democrat stepped up to run against her, or even a Republican to primary the queen of torture in the U.S. House. All right. Quick break. We'll try to cheer up. Okay, that was the darkest part of the show, I think.
Yeah.
I think we'll try to find something to cheer me up anyway after this break. But I wanted to be clear on that record. All right. I'm Brad Friedman. This is the Bradcast. Don't touch that dial. Not us. We will never lie to you here on the Bradcast. Welcome back to it. I'm Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. You know who does lie? Well, you know, I don't like to cover rumors, and I also don't like to cover Bill Kristol.
I don't blame you.
Because for a number of reasons. One, he's always wrong. He has a history of being wrong about pretty much everything for years and years. Now, he's come around in that he's an anti-Trump guy, in theory. He's a Republican, but he's an anti-Trump guy, a never-Trump guy. But he's, you know, he's still kind of always wrong. And plus, I don't like to report rumors. Nonetheless, Bill Kristol has some rumors that he's reporting on Twitter, and he says, quote, this is room int, which means rumor intelligence, but he says pretty credible room int. He tweeted on Thursday, Trump preparing to fire Jeff Sessions, naming Scott Pruitt as the acting attorney general, which he can do, which he can be since he already holds a Senate confirmed position. And Pruitt fires Mueller as AG, and then McMaster is likely to be replaced by John Bolton, and Shulkin also out of the way. He's Shulkin is the head of the
Veterans Administration,
right? The key place there, two key points there. One, of course, McMaster and the possibility that he'll be replaced by crazy man John Bolton, who, as Marcy Wheeler said the other day, would be in charge of nuking Korea, North Korea. But the idea that he might fire Jeff Sessions and put the EPA chief, Scott Pruitt, into Mueller's,
into Sessions'
role, which he can do without having to get confirmation by the U.S. Senate.
Correct.
Because he has already been Senate confirmed for his job at EPA.
For a cabinet position, therefore
right.
He can move laterally.
At least to be the acting to
yes.
have the acting title. And with that acting title of attorney general, he'd be able to fire Mueller at that point. Now, again, remember, Bill Kristol is always wrong. He's always wrong about everything. And so as troubling as that prospect sounds, maybe we should all feel better because Bill Kristol said it might happen, which means that it probably won't.
Keep your fingers crossed, because those are all very disturbing developments
yep.
if they were to happen.
Yep. And they could happen at any time before we go off the air. I don't think Donald Trump has yet fired anybody today, but the day is still young. This comes at a time that Special Counsel Robert Mueller has reportedly subpoenaed the Trump Organization itself. That is a, as Bloomberg describes, a line that President Donald Trump had set out early in the investigation as a red line. He said that, you know, you can investigate Russia, but you can't investigate me and my business dealings and the Trump Organization along those lines. Now, the breadth of the subpoena that was reported by the New York Times is still unknown. It's unclear exactly what it is they're subpoenaing from the Trump Organization. But Trump has suggested that he views his real estate business as beyond the purview of Mueller's investigation. Bloomberg says the development triggers new concerns that Trump, who is in the midst of a high-level staff shakeup, may try to oust Mueller, which could set off a political crisis in Washington and perhaps even a constitutional struggle. Trump has never said explicitly that he would fire Mueller if the prosecutor went after Trump's finances, but asked by the New York Times last July whether that would be a red line, Trump replied, I think that's a violation. Look, this is about Russia, he said. Actually, no, Mr. President, it's about you and whether you committed any crimes in your dealings with Russia and in your attempt to block the investigation into your dealings with Russia. So all of this remains to be seen, but it remains very troubling at this hour. At least for me, even with Bill Kristol's comments, That could happen. Just wanted to get that on record for now, because at this point, Trump could do anything. Trump will do anything. He will say anything. He will do anything. We got more evidence of that just a day or so ago, because, you know, he's nuts. He will do what he damn well wants. He thinks he can get away with anything and that nobody can or will stop him, which, by the way, might be true. He is even willing now to admit to being a huge liar. He's, as a matter of fact, he's bragging about being a huge liar. You probably heard this story, but I think it's of note for several reasons, including the way the media is now dealing with Donald Trump. I found this striking and frankly refreshing, the way Washington Post reported on this piece that was filed very late on Wednesday night for Thursday's paper. They reported that President Trump had boasted in a fundraising speech on Wednesday that he made up information in a meeting with the leader of a top U.S. ally, saying that he insisted to Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau that the U.S. runs a trade deficit with Canada, without knowing whether or not that was actually true. Donald Trump was bragging about this. Here's the quotes from Washington Post, who received audio tapes of this fundraiser in St. Louis, Missouri. I may have had some family members at that fundraiser. I haven't confirmed it with them, but it's very possible. Anyway, but I digress. Here's what apparently Trump said, according to these tapes. Trudeau came to see me. He's a good guy, Justin. He said, no, we have no trade deficit with you. We have none. Donald, please, Trump said, mimicking Trudeau, according to audio obtained by The Washington Post. Nice guy, good looking guy, comes in. Donald, we have no trade deficit. He's very proud because everybody else, you know, we're getting killed. So he's proud. I said, wrong, Justin, you do have a trade deficit. I didn't even know, he admits. I had no idea. I just said, you're wrong. You know why? Because we're so stupid. And I thought they were smart. I said, you're wrong, Justin. He said, nope, we have no trade deficit. I said, well, in that case, I feel differently. I said, but I don't believe it. He says, I sent one of our guys out, his guy, my guy, they went out, check, because I can't believe it. Well, sir, you're actually right. We have no deficit. But that doesn't include energy and timber. And when you do, we lose $17 billion a year. It's incredible. This is what Donald Trump was saying. So he's admitting that he was lying to the Prime Minister of Canada, or at least making stuff up, did not know, admitting he had no idea whether we had a trade deficit or not, claiming that Canada didn't know what they were talking about, that we do have a trade deficit. Well, the office of the Washington Post just reports straight in response. The office of the U.S. Trade Representative says the United States has a $12.5 billion trade surplus with Canada. A surplus. He also went into a blistering attack against other major U.S. allies. One of them that caught my eye, and this whole article was amazing, but one of them that caught my eye was he accused Japan. Again, another one of our top trading allies here. He accused Japan of using gimmicks to deny U.S. auto companies access to their consumers. He said, quote, it's the bowling ball test. They take a bowling ball from 20 feet up in the air and they drop it on the hood of a car, Trump said of Japan. If the hood dents, the car doesn't qualify. It's horrible, he said. Washington Post notes, it was unclear what he was talking about.
Yeah, it's not true. It just is not true. It does not happen. Japan does not do that.
He said he didn't even want Japan to pay the tariffs, but to build more automobiles in the U.S. He was talking about the steel and aluminum tariffs, which the auto industry says is going to hurt them.
It's a hell of a way to try to get Japan to put in more factories in the United States when you lie about them and what their little bowling ball test,
which is not true. he said that... That Japan would, in fact, build more automobiles in the U.S. if the tariffs were imposed. Washington Post response, there is no evidence of such a possibility as of now. His comments they had were among his most protectionist to date and didn't identify a single benefit the U.S. receives from its trading relationships. So good for the Washington Post for, well, A, getting the information in the first place, obtaining those tapes, but B, just speaking so directly to how Trump is making stuff up, is just lying.
With impunity so far, I might add.
And bragging about it, bragging to his own donors that he doesn't know anything. I think progress in writing about this was just gobsmacked by the pantheon of deceit that President Donald Trump has constructed in his brief civic career. And they quote Bella DiPaolo, a social scientist who has extensively studied liars and the makeup of personalities that regularly traffic in deceit. She said Trump is unlike most of the people that she has researched. Quote, his lies are both more frequent and more malicious than ordinary people's, she wrote for the Washington Post, saying, by telling so many lies and so many that are mean-spirited, Trump is violating some of the most fundamental norms of human social interaction and human decency. Many of the rest of us, in turn, have abandoned a norm of our own. We no longer give Trump the benefit of the doubt that we usually give so readily. That would include the Washington Post, and good for them. Such behavior, Sam Fullwood writes, I think progress is reprehensible when discovered by, say, a spouse, a coworker, or casual acquaintance, but for someone granted with the public's trust, gratuitous and simple-minded lying puts our society and all its norms at risk. And the guy is proud of it. He is bragging about it. All of this, of course, is just one reason why I describe what we are going through right now as a national emergency and one that must be met with an appropriate response this November. Some news on that after a quick break. I'm Brad Friedman. This is the Bradcast.
Singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise.
Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Sad news on Friday, Congresswoman Louise Slaughter, a Democrat who represented the Rochester, New York area in Congress since 1987, died on Friday morning in a Washington, D.C. hospital. She was 88 years old and one of the longest serving women in the House of Representatives. She was serving in her 16th term. She fell ill at her Washington residence last week and was taken to George Washington University Hospital to receive treatment and monitoring for a concussion. She was recognized as a fierce legislator who blazed trails for other women to enter politics. Jamie Romeo, chair of the Monroe County, New York Democratic Party, said she was a living icon for women from all walks of life who wanted to get off the sidelines and make a positive change in their community. She retained her Southern accent long after her move from her native Kentucky. She was known to charm constituents and colleagues alike with a folksy manner. The progressive Slaughter also was willing to step into the political trenches. Norm Ornstein, a resident scholar at the Conservative American Enterprise Institute and a friend of hers, said that Slaughter refused to let her age slow her down. He said, what struck me most the last 10 years, as I get a little older myself and find I don't have quite the energy I once did, this was somebody that was just an energizer bunny, feisty, and wouldn't take crap from people. By the way, I had no idea that Louise Slaughter was 88 years old.
Neither did I. I mean, she couldn't have been a day over 60
she was indeed feisty and a champion, a progressive champion for all sorts of things over the decades. No idea that she was 88 years old and no idea that we were about to lose her. She chaired the powerful House Rules Committee, which determines how bills reach the floor for a vote from 2007 to 2011. She was the only woman to ever hold that position. She also remained the committee's ranking member at the time of her death. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said to Congresswoman Louise Slaughter was a giant. Another giant himself, civil rights icon, and Congressman John Lewis of Georgia said in a statement, "My heart is broken. For decades, Congresswoman Slaughter fought for those who were left out and left behind, and she gave voice, hope, and comfort to those who felt alone, lost, and abandoned. I vividly remembered working to break the cycle of violence against women with her and to stop discrimination based on race, income, religion, ability, region, gender identity, or genetic information." Louise was a patriot and a hero, said John Lewis, a hero himself. Another heroic Congresswoman, Barbara Lee of California, she emailed a statement today reading in part, "I am heartbroken over the passing of my dear friend and mentor. Louise was a fighter and champion for American working families for over 30 years. She was a trailblazer, the first woman to serve as the chair of the Rules Committee, and the only microbiologist in Congress."
Yep. She was a trailblazer.
We could use more scientists in Congress.
Most definitely.
A lot more. Throughout her years of service, says Lee, she stayed true to the working families who believed in her. She used her role as chair to fight for children, families, women, communities of color, those living in poverty. She served the public with fearlessness, fierceness, and a sense of humor. "I will miss her dearly. This is a monumental loss for Congress, our country, and the world," says Lee. The list of Slaughter's legislative accomplishments is lengthy. She authored the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act, or GINA, leading the bill for 14 years before it finally passed Congress and was signed into law by President George W. Bush in 2008. She was instrumental in the passage of the STOCK Act, which stands for Stop Trading on Congressional Knowledge. Essentially, that was the act to at least begin to curb insider trading by members of Congress, which did not used to be illegal.
No. In fact, her law led to disclosures about former Health and Human Services Director Tom Price.
Mm-hmm.
Remember him?
Yep.
His controversial stock trades back when he was a House member, and he was privy to that confidential pharmaceutical industry information.
That he traded on and made a lot of money on,
yep,
apparently.
Yep. Her bill led to those disclosures.
She also co-authored the landmark Violence Against Women Act, which has helped reduce the cases of domestic violence by 67%,
yeah,
since 1994. In 2009, by the way, she also brought the Affordable Care Act to the House floor for the historic vote. So she will be missed by Democrats, Republicans, and frankly, Americans alike. A special election will be held to elect someone to serve out the rest of her term, which expires in January. Governor Andrew Cuomo in New York will set a date for that special election. In the meantime, the 2018 midterms, as you may have heard, are already underway. And on that news, we've got some cheerier news for Democrats. The Cook Political Report on Friday, a top nonpartisan election handicapper, shifted 9 U.S. House races to more favorable for Democrats in this year's midterm elections. The new rating changes that were released on Friday come a few days after Pennsylvania's nationally watched House special election, where Democrats will likely have a huge upset in that district in Pennsylvania's 18th congressional district, one that Trump won by nearly 20 points in 2016. Democrat Connor Lamb declared victory on election night. He leads the Republican in that race, Rick Saccone, by just 627 votes out of more than 128,000 cast. The New York Times has called it for Connor Lamb. The Associated Press still has not. But this was a huge swing in a deeply red district. And that led Cook Politico Report to change some of their ratings to move them a little bit closer into the Democratic zone. For example, some of the most notable ratings changes include 3 races that have shifted from lean Republican to now toss-up. Those are seats held by Republican Congress members Leonard Lance in New Jersey, Brian Fitzpatrick in Pennsylvania, and Keith Rothfuss in Pennsylvania. Those were lean Republican districts. Now, they are full toss-ups. Other notable rating changes include the shift from likely Republican to just lean Republican. For Congressman Steve Pierce's open seat in New Mexico and the special election to fill the seat vacated by Ohio Rep. Pat Tiberi. Congressman Ami Berra's California, he's a Democrat. His seat, which is a frequent GOP target, has also shifted from lean Democrat to likely Democrat.
Ah.
So it's all shifting over a bit, piece by piece, according to the Cook Politico report, who follows this stuff closer than anybody. There were also several seats that were already considered to be safe for Democrats, but that have tilted even more in the Democratic direction.
Even safer.
Yes, they have shifted from likely Democrat to solid Democrat. Those are seats held by Representative Salud Carbajal. Carbajal, I don't know how to say it. I'm too much of a Yankee to know. He's a Democrat in California. And Charlie Crist, Democrat from Florida. I forgot that Charlie Crist is actually now a Democrat and that he's now in the U.S. House of Representatives.
I had completely forgotten
the
that.
The former Republican governor of Florida. Yeah. So his seat moves from likely Democrat to solid Democrat, as does Tom Suozzi, Democrat from New York. So some good news for Democrats there. And before we go, some not quite as good, not quite as good news for Republicans. You know, the Democratic Party has had a glut of candidates running all across the country. We've been reporting on how they're stepping up. You know, we talked about scientists.
Yeah.
Teachers are stepping up. All sorts of folks are stepping up to run. And frankly, the Democratic Party is getting to the point where it's got a glut of candidates who are running. It's going to be a lot of primaries. And that could cause, in fact, some problems for Democrats here in California, where we have these terrible top two primaries, which essentially means that all the candidates from all the parties run in one single primary, and the top two vote getters then move on to compete head to head in November, even if they are from the same party. Which means that in some districts out here that are currently you've got Republicans holding the seat, but it could easily tilt towards Democrats this year. Well, in some of those districts, there's a whole bunch of Democrats who are running to get the nomination. And that means there may be too many Democrats running, and those Democrats, with that many Democrats, their support is going to be split up in these otherwise Republican districts in a way that means that none of the Democrats may qualify for the race this November. You might have two Republicans running against each other in the November election because there are so many Democrats trying to win in the primary. So Democrats may undo themselves with that embarrassment of riches, I suspect, in a number of places out here in California. Meanwhile, Republicans seem to be having the opposite problem. Nobody wants to run. The Clark County, Nevada Republican Party says that it will pay Nevada residents to run for public office due to the lack of conservative candidates in a number of districts in Nevada. They can't even get anyone who wants to run this year. Here's how this letter went, this announcement went. As I'm sure you're aware, candidate filing is about to close, and we're still short on candidates in many Senate and Assembly races. This came from the Clark County Republican Party. They wrote this in an email to donors and to supporters on Friday. Quote, to sweeten the pot, Clark County Republican Party is willing to put up $1,500 to reimburse the filing fee for the first Republican to file in any of these districts. They don't even care if they're any good. They'll pay the filing fee. The districts listed in the email include These are state assembly. State assembly districts 1, 3, 6, 7, 10, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 34, and 42. They got no one who has stepped up to run in those districts. Also, state senate districts 2, 10, and 21. They can't get a candidate to run. They are willing to pay them money. They are so desperate to get candidates to run for this. Clark County Republican Party added, "Today is the final day. We must have the candidates file before 4 p.m. Filing ends at 4 p.m. The first to file in these districts gets reimbursed their filing fee. Hurry, this is the last day." So nearly all of these seats are currently held by Democrats. In an email, by the way, to Think Progress, who reported this on Friday, Clark County Republican Central Committee Chair Carl Bruntz clarified that the funding for reimbursement is not coming actually from the Clark County Republicans. It's coming from a single donor.
Wow.
Who they failed to identify.
Well, yeah.
So, you know, I wonder who that donor could be. I wonder why they didn't want to reveal it. But they are buying Republican candidates right now. Well, not anymore after the deadline on Friday. But who knows why they didn't want to identify that donor. Am I right, Las Vegas billionaire Sheldon Adelson? Just guessing. Just guessing. All right, we got to get out of here. More guesses on our next thrilling broadcast. Until then, Desi Doyen. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Our producer. And thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show, download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. Drop me email if you like. Always glad to hear from you, even if I can't always respond, but I try. My email address, bradcast@bradblog.com. You can find, follow, and share us also on the Twitters and the Facebooks at TheBradBlog. And my thanks to those of you who stop by and sign up for a subscription of any amount you like, a monthly subscription to the Bradcast. It's free, but we could use your support at bradblog.com/donate, at least until Sheldon Adelson decides to give us $1,500 every time we open our mouths.
Yeah, right.
We may be waiting for a while. So thank you, bradblog.com/donate. That's it. Until we meet again, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.